Mindfulness Toward Chikantaza, and subtitle, Thinking, Breathing, and Whatever is Unnameable and Indescribable. That Dogen's word, that has nothing to do whatsoever with sitting or standing or lying down. It is... There's no language that can really describe what it is. What came to mind this morning is wearing the Tathagata's teachings in the bright, boundless field of emptiness, or beyond form and emptiness. But something's here, I think, and another way of capturing it is you are not it. It is you. That difference, I think, is what the cultivation of harmony, internal and external, might address. But to go back to thinking and breathing as an entryway toward mindfulness, I have maybe half a dozen sources that I want to mention. One is the recent issue of the Shambhala Sun magazine has two articles. And I'm not quite sure what the titles are, but one says, "This is my mind, luminous and empty." And I don't know if many of you were at the talk that Shoho or Kokyo gave maybe a month ago, two separate talks, but they talked about that. Kokyo talked about, you know, where is the I in that? The mind is clearly present. Who is the self, or where is the self? And Shoho asked us to think about what we would say when we get up in the morning to ourselves, to sort of direct our lives and open our lives, and what we would say at the last moment of our life for the same reason. But she also said that you are love, compassion, and luminous. And in this article, the first article by Sokni Rinpoche, he talks about the luminous mind as being, he talks also about the discursive thinking and afflictive emotions that sort of trigger most of our mundane thinking and keep it rolling, one thought after the other, one emotion after the other, and it's sort of a aspect of ego. We have a thought and we build on it and we sort of reshape it and put it in our mind and remember it eventually in terms of our egocentric or our self-centered perspective, and also what we want and what our desires and so on. But the mind itself, the following article is, I wish I could read my handwriting. "The beautiful energy of thoughts" describes an exercise in which basically the most, I think, rudimentary exercise in breathing mindfulness, which is just to breathe in and sense the breath as it enters the tips of your nostrils and breathe out the same way. And then breathing in again, you again sense the air as it enters your nostrils. It usually feels fresh and cool. It's a little bit too warm today to have that great feeling, but it brings you back to your body, your consciousness. And in that, one arrives at this mind, and it becomes aware of the mind and its clarity. We'll come back to that in just a second. The other source that I think is primary source that I'll go through in breathing is the Anapanasati Sutra, and also the Anapananudriti Sutra, the Buddha speaking and giving advice into how to cultivate mindfulness. It's called the Sutra on the Full Awareness of Breathing. And it goes, if you sort of follow this with your own breath and your own sensation, sensing, breathing. I'm aware of my body, my whole body. Breathing, I calm my body. Breathing, I feel joy. There's always some joy. Breathing, happiness. Joy dissolves to happiness in my mind. Breathing, awareness of mind. Breathing, mind happy. Anji always advises to put a half smile on your face in zazen as part of the precaution. Breathing, I focus my mind, usually on wherever the center of your being is, the hara or the, in my case, the spine and nervous system. Breathing, I liberate my mind. That's sort of the key. Breathing, I'm aware of impermanence. Everything is changing on every scale. Breathing, dissolution of desire, just actually seeing what I want right now and then letting it go. Breathing, cessation of desire, just stopping it. Breathing, letting go, both of desire and delusions. Delusion that we're separate, for example. It's just the breathing that we're into. In the Anapananumsriti Sutra, he talks about also the seven factors of awakening, which I think we've gone through before, but briefly there, mindfulness is the base, and then there's investigation of dharmas, a question like, who am I, and what is this self? And third, and fourth, and fifth, there's energy, joy, and ease. It's actually pretty easy just to sit here. We're not putting a lot of, not raising mountains. The sixth is concentration. Once you have this mindfulness and investigation of dharmas, the joy, energy, ease facilitates concentration. And the seventh is equanimity. These factors, Buddha goes on to say, are like, if you practice them continuously, regularly, in conjunction with cessation of delusions, cessations of desire, letting go of them, practice any of them, then it will come to perfection, which in my mind I liken to thinking of the seven factors as the seven facets of a diamond. And you actually watch one facet and approach one facet and eventually come into the diamond of awakening. Once that happens, he also, in the sutra, describes that there occurs a natural clarity of thinking and feeling and perception and liberation, finally. So to me, the key things that I want out of any practice are mindfulness and liberation, freedom from my own predispositions and habits and compulsions. And Ian said in a session, at the end of a session, I think, that you can take those habits, those predispositions, and grind them or polish them or work with them or gradually get rid of them. But then you can just brush them away. They don't really exist. So we're all conscious, awake, aware.
just brush away the negative, maybe, and even the positive. So I went to a session or a workshop on this with Gil Fonsdale and Victoria Austin at San Francisco Zen Center about 4 months ago. And he pretty much went through the same sutra, which is good because I've been studying it for a year or two before then. But he also, he's an incredible teacher and somebody I've never experienced before, and he had a number of things that he wanted to add. Also, Victoria did. She likened mind control to being like cat control. How do you train a cat? The same kinds of thing apply to your mind. It's pretty much, well, it's whatever you think it is. Gil said it was like softening the mind, warming it like wax in your hand with the breath. So you gradually soften the mind. It gradually becomes softer, more open, more flexible as a result of just paying attention to your breathing, going through the steps of any one of the breathing exercises. Be present with death as it is. There's pleasure in it, there's joy, there's new experiences, there are many variations, relaxing body formations, relaxing mind formations. But don't get carried away. Don't go too far. Don't try to reach anything. Don't be in a hurry. He also said that the common misconception is that when you encounter some resistance, some problem in your doing this, don't expect to be able to necessarily get rid of that. And that if you can only find liberation and find peace, find harmony, after all your problems have been resolved, you're in deep trouble. It won't happen. We're suffering, we're dying progressively. And a lot of our friends are also suffering, loved ones. So in this breathing, mindfully watching the mind, you learn to distinguish and discriminate between mind moods. There are a lot of different mind moods, or a lot of different aspects of thinking that you have to be able to carefully observe and carefully be aware of as they happen, and not elaborate them, not follow an endless chain of thoughts. So from that, I wanted to go briefly to mention some talks by Maizumi Roshi in Los Angeles Zen Center that are on the web. So if you search under them under Maizumi and Taishos, you'll find them. But he's basically saying that he was the founder of Los Angeles Zen Center, and he's got an enormous heritage that's flourished, flowered after he died. What he was advocating was, first of all, this kind of breathing exercise. And he said, go ahead and go do this exercise for maybe 5 or 10 minutes at the beginning of your zazen. Do it deliberately and systematically. Also do things like body scans. Like, body scans are very, very popular, and almost, you know, feeding your toes, sensing the base of your feet, your heels, and working up through your ankles and legs and thighs and into your body and all the way up through your head. Open up all the sensations progressively, and don't hurry. Take a few minutes just opening up the sensations in your head. He also talked about circulating energy, which I think is very close to something that I've been doing unconsciously or consciously for 40 years, which is, you know, feeling the energy at the base of my spine and actually systematically bringing it upwards. Maybe in the course of 1 or 2 breaths, lifting it up through the various, there are meridians in the back of the spine, two meridians in the back. One actually goes inside the spine, one goes through the kidney. And it's pretty easy to actually feel the energy rising and bring it up through the various chakras. You can feel the different energy centers in your spine, and to me they feel like resistances or centers of maybe pain and irritation. But that effort, that raising the energy up into the head and then having it sort of enliven the top of your head and your brow, and then gradually bring it down over your temples and over your cheekbones and your cheeks, and I bring it into my mouth area and into my chin and sort of swallow it viscerally. And it comes down actually through two meridians in the front of the body as well. There are three energy centers also that Maizumi describes, which are the Hara in the lower belly and in the heart. He calls them tandems. Tandems, I think. And in the head, a couple of inches behind the eyebrow, and he says actually to focus and bring those into an object of concentration. And to do this overall, maybe just for a few minutes at the beginning of the meditation period. And then let them all go. So, the meditation period itself, the Zazen, Shikantaza, or whatever meditation you do, I think is ultimately indescribable. It's sort of reaching beyond words and beyond descriptions, and words actually defile it. But nevertheless, I picked up something like 20 very positive ways of describing it and 20 very negative ways of describing it. They're just aspects sort of pointing toward that. Fingers pointing toward the moon, as it were. But the three key ones, the first is just sitting, but doing that almost with the Metta Sutra, strenuous, upright, and sincere. In general, in any connotation, with a straight spine, is highly encouraged. Without pride, easily contented and joyous also goes along with this posture, this being. Wholeheartedly is the word that Mike uses to describe the practice, and I'll come back to that because it influences everything beyond this. Wholeheartedly being here now, just staying here, not going anywhere. Already complete, or already everything's accomplished. There's nothing more to do. You're not trying to attain, I'm not trying to gain, not trying to get ahead, I'm not trying to figure out, not trying to plan. And this, and the right effort is necessary. There is an effort involved, but it leads to no effort. Ultimately, it becomes effortless. It becomes totally subjective, too. It's not I. You could use the koan, who am I? Or what am I? Or what is this? And then, if you find something, it's almost like you're sitting with, like a cartoon character with little balloons identifying, I am this or I am that. You can pop those balloons systematically. You can just sort of relax into the wholeheartedness of the posture and the breathing and the mindfulness. This, in my terms, purely experiential. And it's inclusive of everything, awake, present, inclusive. At each moment, this sort of fresh and new. There's no continuity. Our minds sort of make a movie out of our lives, or a whole batch of movies. Mm-hmm. But that's just our minds. The other aspect of our mind is color, sound, smell, taste. Are all our mind's concoctions. And in part, they're there, but they're not quite what we label them to be. The self, selfing itself for itself, and the Dharma gaze of ease and joy are two traditional ones. The Dharma gaze of ease and joy is from Dogen. This posture is sort of is a Dharma gate, a way toward what is inexpressible and indescribable, is actually joyful and easy. And I think that's progressive. Gil mentioned in his seminar that throughout this period he's finding increasing joy in the practice. Two final ones on that line is consciousness, becoming conscious of itself. Awareness, resting on awareness. On the negative side, think not thinking, non-thinking, beyond thinking. Another one that's really key is one must disappear in the sitting, something from Koban. And wholehearted sitting is just that. No I, no ego. Being empty of oneself or unstained. No preferences, desires, or aversions. Non-objective, free of objects. Desireless, notionless, emptiness. The three marks of Buddhism. The traditional ones from dropping off body and mind from Dogen. No ego, non-judgmental, no believing in ideals or ideas. Non-belonging, non-excluding. Releasing effort, releasing energy. Nothing to gain. Attention, but without believing anything about it, and without making it your personal, without making it personal to yourself. It's just attention. Don't recall, imagine, think, examine, or control. Just rest in this. From Suzuki Roshi, when we sit, we are nothing. We do not even realize what we are. Many of those, to me, are kind of ideals, and I don't really attain them. So I, you know, the summary is, in doing, we're just sitting. In being, we're being mindful, being attentive. In feeling and thoughts, whatever comes up is noticed and allowed to go. I had an aha moment couple of days ago, which I thought I'd relate, and I have no idea if it's any validity, but it's pretty interesting to me at least, because for all my life I've been really concerned about dreams, and many of them nightmares, but many different kinds of dreams, a lot of them frustrating, a lot of them rewarding. And in the dreams there are wide varieties of ways of seeing them. Like I could be the principal character. In nightmares, I can be the victim. In many cases, I might be just a member of the cast, and part of what's going on, but just part of the whole thing. And in many of them, it would be as like I'm watching a movie. So that movie is what's ongoing. It's really interesting, but I'm totally absorbed in it, so it's purely experiential, something that's happening. And sleep in general, which has been puzzling me, I now see is sort of, you drop off into the dreamless deep sleep when you go to sleep, typically. And then after an hour or so, you come out of that and you go into a dream of one kind or another, maybe a couple of hours. And then throughout the night, this cycle, as you go back into deep sleep, sort of a a ground state or a primal condition that we can get down to and then back up to the dreams, one of any one of the aspects of looking at the dream, any aspect of being in the dream, or being part of the dream, or seeing the dream. When you're waking life, I think much the same is true. At least this was my aha. I have no psychological background, except there was a number of books recently that have done experimental studies and shown that all of life, all of our rational decisions, everything we do is sort of covered with our own personal biases and social biases that are prevalent. And there is in this country a pervasive optimistic bias. I think it's true of every society. Everybody's, you know, gung-ho, willing to contribute to the practice and to the project. And everyone underestimates how long it's going to take and how much it's going to cost. But we generally do have a lot of biases. This is not to say that we're totally irrational, but just that when we're doing things, we're in various modes or moods almost. I consider them sort of ego states. And to me, the sitting practice, this again is my theory, it may not prove out, is a way of sort of thinning the ego states. You actually can feel the sensations in your head as they sort of lessen and meld and wane. And this perfection that is unnameable and indescribable is maybe what happens as a contrast or a polar opposite of the deep sleep, total awakeness without ego. And that then gives us, just as the deep sleep gives us a rooting or a ground for our sleeping, the awakeness in Shikantaza gives us a ground for all the moods and the modes of ego that we normally do and think and feel in. That is our life. So, in conclusion, I have no idea what time it is, but I haven't heard the bell yet.
We have 10 moments.
Wonderful. What you put together again. I'm so impressed by your ability to do that, since it seems far-reaching for me. So it's very helpful. It's a lot to take in.
Your first statements were something of the order of you are it and it is you. That
You are not it. But it is you.
But it is you. Could you? I'm sure the whole talk was about that. Could you just explain it in 1 minute?
Oh yeah, you're not it.
It almost sounds like form is emptiness and emptiness is form.
Yeah, it's definitely true. Buddha nature, or original nature, if you prefer that, what you really are. But it's also actualization. But what is actually happening is really the Dharma unfolding. We just have a lot of, we color mind, me, this is what I want, this is what I'm going to do. But also, more particularly, this whole talk is just a patchwork. So all I'm doing is gathering stuff and things. And that particular line is from the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. It's a poem of about 20 lines or so. And I cannot begin to describe it. It's very, very beautiful and very mind boggling.
The Jewel Mirror Samadhi.
Yeah. We had a sesshin on it maybe 2 years ago.
I don't know why, but today I found myself just repeating, if, as my thoughts would start taking me places, I am nothing. And it was, what was the, was it Suzuki Roshi that you said?
When we sit, we are nothing. We do not even know what we are.
I found it to be really helpful and really powerful. It was a way for me to disconnect from all of that and just kind of really become the observer. And today was one of the best, both sits were like the best I've had, maybe ever here. I don't know if it's related to that or not, but yeah. So that was great to hear that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I also had an experience, particularly in the second sitting, it was, and I had just said, well, it's Jokochi's energy somehow. It's completely getting through all of my stuff. And it was wonderful. I think, yeah, I do feel that usually when I come to Jokochi, as opposed to sitting alone, I just feel my own energy. Melissa?
Thank you for that. I so appreciate it, the bringing in of the mindfulness. As a lot of you know, I teach mindfulness from the Vipassana tradition, and I was doing some mindfulness sessions at a conference at San Francisco State just the past couple of days, and I was able to bring in some of the Zen talk, and I just think it's so beautiful, that intermingling of the practices, and so maybe you could speak more like from your perspective, because I've been doing my own like personal experiments of the marrying of those practices, and I have colleagues who also do that as well. But a little bit more from your perspective of how you see Zen as kind of an accompaniment of, to many other practices or spiritual traditions.
I thank you, and I was aware that this is sort of your topic, mindfulness, so a little bit apprehensive getting into it. But, I think mindfulness, if Thich Nhat Hanh, for example, is everybody's most beloved, or many people's most beloved teacher, and virtually all he teaches is mindfulness. And in my terms, in our tradition, I say mindfulness toward Shikantaza. Meaning it's, yeah, it's breathing awareness, which Thich Nhat Hanh also is a great teacher for. But I think those it doesn't matter where you're going, both of those are equally applicable in terms of which tradition you are. And again, I think the Dogen statement that it has nothing whatsoever to do with sitting and lying down. It's just that this is the way that works. Works for me. It's not the only one, obviously. Yes, Steve.
I think I remember Kogan once talking about Buddha's training, and that what he taught was a synthesis that included the Vipassana approach, and at least one other. I don't remember, he had names for them, and I don't remember what they were, but I got the feeling that what he was teaching was sort of an inclusive kind of meditation practice.
I did not know any specific, you know, other teaching that he sort of integrated, but I do know he was incredibly inclusive. One thing that I forgot to mention during the talk was that focusing on the hara is very important. Many Zen teachers say, put your mind in your belly, essentially focus on the hara. Kogan said the hara can be anywhere in person, and he said you can't really pin it down, you can't show a location. So breathe into your center. What is this? What am I? Bringing joy and love to any part of your center that's feeling the pain, like my legs right now and my back right now.
The pain is the center.
Recently it was on Wednesday evening in Canando, and there was the abbot there was speaking, but there was a man similar like this forum where he was quite educated, it seemed like, on meditation. And then the group broke out and ended, and we were all in the front, and he was talking to a few people, and he said he thought that all the things of like yoga and many other ways of studying spirituality, if you will, he said that difference with they're like blossoms, all of these, and but with Zen, it's the fragrance. I should mention that in context.
Thank you. Thank you very much.